All right, this is KKFN and KKFN HD1 Long Walk Denver.
The 5 o'clock whistle, powered by smart local union 9 sheet metal workers.
We are coming with it, and we are coming for it. It's Zach By and Philip Lindsay, and we are the drive. And just a little house cleaning, nothing major. You know, Milan Hayduk got mentioned in this conversation of, like, who else in Denver sports history, not a Hall of Famer,
yeah,
but spent a really, really long time here and just has a unique connection with the fan base and is kind of interwoven with the team's history. And we were talking about this because I wanted to show love to Charlie Blackman,
yeah,
who at 37 years old is the Rockies' best player right now, hitting .417, good for 10th best in Major League Baseball. You think about all the thoroughbreds right now in baseball, and I know it's 7 games, all right? I know that, all right? But I don't know how many times... I don't know how many times we'll be able to celebrate small victories with the Rockies because, you know, Rockies.
We got to take it when we can.
Yeah.
Because if not, it's going to be a rocky year.
Dude, it's so I'm just choosing to, you know, shine light on some of the good stuff,
yeah,
when it happens.
We have to.
And so we started thinking, who else in Denver sports is like Charlie Blackman? Mike Rice is texting me. Jason Elam was here for so long.
Okay.
And I think he's still the all-time leading scorer in Broncos history. Ended with the Falcons. But, yeah, that's a good one right there.
That is.
James Merrillat is on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. James, what names come to you? You know, this conversation started to take on a life of its own because it got so much interaction from our listeners. Who in Denver sports history reminds you of Charlie Blackman, a non-Hall of Fame player that spent a lot of years here and just as his name is a part of the fabric of this sporting community?
Yeah, it's a great conversation, great question. And the answer that pops in my mind is a guy that probably should be in the Hall of Fame. If you look at his numbers and his accomplishments, you know, if he'd played for the Cowboys, he would be there. But that's Rod Smith. I mean, his numbers are almost identical to Michael Irvin. It's pretty crazy. Michael Irvin has one more Super Bowl, but otherwise they're pretty neck and neck. So Rod Smith played his entire career here. He accomplished some great things here. He's a Ring of Famer, but he's not going to make the Hall of Fame, I don't think. And he's kind of got that, you know, workmanlike attitude about him. He came up as an undrafted guy and made the roster. And so that would be the first name that pops to mind. But, man, you could go back some of those Nuggets teams from the 80s. You know, Fat Lever, he played a long time here. His jersey's up in the rafters, but he's not going to go to the Basketball Hall of Fame. There are quite a few of them because it was a sports town. Then until John Elway went into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, kind of got overlooked in terms of those kind of accolades. So it's a good question. I would go with Rod and Fat just off the top of my head.
What about Eric Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that he was ever great here, though.
But we're not looking for necessarily great.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about 2011 through 2023.
Here a long time. Longevity, yes. I guess, man, and this is not a popular take given the fact that he was a really popular player when they won the Cup a couple of years ago. I think he really hurt him last year by coming back, and he made a lot of money, and that was money they could have used on Kadri. I think Eric Johnson, for the most part, was actually kind of disappointing during his time here, right? He was a high pick. I think he was the number one overall pick by the Blues before they traded for him.
Yeah, yep.
So he was good.
Fan favorite, though, right?
Yeah,
is that fair?
Yeah, but you know, you walk around Ball Arena though. Even a couple of years ago, I don't know how many Eric Johnson jerseys you see.
Okay.
You're going to see a ton of Charlie Blackmans tomorrow. You will. They'll be everywhere. There'll be 19 all over the place. So he may be the only guy. If you walk around, especially as you get closer and closer to first pitch, and ask people, "Hey, name a Rocky," they may not get much past Charlie Blackman tomorrow.
Speaking of Charlie Blackman in the Colorado Rockies, James, what's going on, man? What's your take on what's going on with the Colorado Rockies?
They are dreadful. That's stating the obvious. I think they're going to be the worst Rockies team of all time. I think they have a chance to be the worst professional sports team in the history of Colorado. And this is the town that had the Nuggets went 11-71.
Yes, yes, they did. That's the one.
That was the Bill Hanslick team.
Correct.
And that team was brutal. I mean, they had a shot that year to beat the Sixers' record of 9 wins. They're going to be in that conversation, though, fellas. Like, they're going to be that bad. This is a team that could lose 110. Like, the 100, you know, loss kind of plateau that they hit last year for the first time ever, that may just be the start of it. I mean, they're just brutal. You know, they don't just get beat. They get beat badly most nights. They had a nice comeback last night, made it a game, but they were down 8-0 at one point. It's almost laughable, you know, when you turn on the TV or you open up your ESPN app and check the score, and it's like, oh, my gosh, what can they do to top themselves? It's just a bad baseball team, and as I wrote about on Monday, you know, the Astros, like, a decade ago, were in that kind of realm. They were losing 100 games. They were losing 110.
Yep.
But they had a bunch of guys that you would go to the game, and they were 19, 20 years old, 21. Yeah. And, you know, I remember Toronto coming in here a couple of years ago and looking up at the scoreboard every time somebody would come to the plate, and their birth date was in the 2000s. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, one, that makes me feel old. Two, all right, they're building for the future. This isn't a team that's doing that. I mean, they got a guy that got his first hit last night that's their highest-paid player that is over the hill. Charlie Blackmon, you know, a fan favorite. He's their best player in terms of production right now. He's certainly nearing the end of his career. Kyle Freeland is, you know, on the downside. It's just like, man, if they were going out there and getting beat with a bunch of guys that were 20, 21, 22, and you could see the future of Mitt, just know what they're going to be in a couple of years, that'd be one thing. There's a couple of nice young players on this team, but not enough. So, you know, the unfortunate part is they're bad. They're actually relatively expensive. It's not like they're, you know, restocking the coffers with cash.
That's mind-blowing.
And they're not young, so it's just like it's the triple whammy. It's just depressing.
Yeah, it is. It is. And by the way, you know what the Rockies would have to go this year to match the winning percentage of the 1997-98 Denver Nuggets?
It'd probably be, what, like 20 and 142 or something? Like
25 and 137.
So, all right, that ain't happening. Yeah. You got me with the math, Zach. You got me. they're going to be in that conversation of, like, one of the worst teams to ever play in this state.
Yeah. We're talking with our buddy James Marilat. He's on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. There's a pretty sizable question just sort of hanging in the balance in Denver sports, and it's Jamal Murray. And I think everyone's like, yeah, he's going to be back. He's going to be back. Yeah. Well, we all think that, but I also thought that last Wednesday when they're hosting the Suns. I thought it was Friday against Minnesota and Sunday against Cleveland, and now it's starting to stack up where he's missed as many games as the Nuggets have left in the season, and we're not exactly sure what happened. I watch every possession. I don't remember a sequence where Jamal hurt his knee. It just sort of popped up, and he's going through warm-ups, so he's going to be fine, but he's also going through warm-ups, and he's not playing. Are you getting, I'll just ask you, are you getting concerned?
Yeah, I am. And look, when, you know, a couple of years ago when he didn't come back after the knee surgery, after a year off, he was going through warm-ups and stuff then, too. I mean, just because he's going through warm-ups doesn't mean much. That doesn't mean it's imminent that he's going to be back on the court. It's gone on a long time. Like you said, it's a mystery. We don't know how in the heck it happened. That's worrisome. And, you know, with the play-in tournament now, there's already a break once the regular season ends. If he doesn't come back and play two or three or four games, at some point you got to start wondering, well, is he going to be rusty? Is he going to be ready to go? Like, you know, that first series, all of a sudden, game one, game two, if he's not 100% and he's not firing on all cylinders, do you drop a game and all of a sudden you find yourself in a series in the opening round that you didn't think would be tough? So, yeah, I'm worried about it. You know, Zach, I've said it to you guys a ton, though. I wake up with the worry meter at a 6, so I get it. But it's until I see him on the floor, until I see him look like Jamal, then, yeah, I'm going to be worried because they're not winning. They're not defending their title without him, no doubt. I don't know that they get out of the first or second round without him. We've seen that act before.
Yep.
Right? We saw it other than last year. That was kind of their MO. So it is a major, major concern. It's a team that, fellas, they got a little lucky last year with the fact that they've got no depth, really, and they were able to get by, and that's because they were in control of every series. And, you know, the opponent always was trying to adjust to them. They didn't have to really make any adjustments along the way and try some different lineups. I mean, essentially, Michael Malone played the same 8 guys in all 20 games. It was the same rotation, same 8 guys, other than a couple of blowouts. So, the lack of depth at some point is going to catch up to him. And then you take Jamal out of the lineup, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's an alarming lack of depth. They got like six guys you would trust at that point. So very, very worrisome. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that he's back on the court and back on the court soon, but it's gone beyond where any of us thought it would, that's for sure.
James, yesterday, Zach and I, you know, we went through a little game, right? And we were talking about the Colorado Avalanche, the Denver Nuggets. Who do you trust more going to the playoffs? And correct me if I'm wrong, Zach. The goalie position, we have Georgiev as a starter and Onanen as a backup, or the Denver Nuggets bench.
Wow. That is a tough call.
Who do you trust?
I'm going to go the Avs goalies. I don't trust that Nuggets bench at all.
Ooh.
I just don't. I mean, Bruce Brown was their best bench player a year ago. He's not here. Reggie hardly played in the playoffs last year. Now, he's going to be one of the main guys. Christian Brown stepped up in the postseason last year, but he certainly hasn't taken the leap forward everybody thought this season. I think they're woefully thin. I'm going to go, yeah, that's a tough, I mean, it's basically a coin flip, which is why it makes it a great talk show question, but I'll go with the Avs goaltenders. I'll go with Georgiev. I think he's a guy that, he's not an elite goaltender.
No.
But can he be that on any given night and maybe steal a game or two? Yeah. Is that Nuggets bench going to steal a game when the starters are off? I don't buy that. I just don't.
James, and look, I think reasonable minds can disagree on this for the reason that you said. That's what makes it a fun question. But you say, could Georgie steal you a game? You think so? And we racked our brains yesterday. Georgie had the entire season. Did he steal a game for the Avs ever? And I follow this team as closely as anyone at the station, maybe second to Mike or, you know, whoever. I don't remember that game, James.
I don't either, and he certainly didn't steal one, you know, against the Kraken. So, I do think, though, at times he's shown that ability, but you're right. I mean, it's not like I can tell you, yeah, January 10th in New York against the Rangers or whatever. You know, there's not the game that I recall, but is he a more consistent, bona fide starting goaltender in the NHL than some of the Nuggets bench players are in terms of would those guys be sixth and seventh man in Boston and in Milwaukee and in other places where they legitimately think they're a title contender?
I feel like the answer
is no. I just feel like it's a team that, man, their starting five is great.
Yep.
When they're healthy, it's the best starting five in basketball.
Yep.
But you get beyond that, and it's trouble time. So, listen, I don't trust either one of them. But if you made me pick one, I'll take Georgie, and I'll cross my fingers.
This is why last year I was getting called by Dan Jacobs and others being dramatic about the loss of Bruce Brown. Mm. Bruce Brown changed that basketball team. Where you just made the analogy, you said, would any of these guys be the sixth, seventh guys in Milwaukee or et cetera? Bruce Brown would have started for three quarters of the league last year.
Yeah.
And the fact that he came off the bench and in the finals could put up a 21-point game in the finals.
Yeah.
I got a stat for you, and it's staggering, and I had a listener send it to me. Make sure you're sitting down here. This is wild. Last year in the NBA playoffs, there was 17 performances off the bench where someone scored 10 points or more. Mm. Bruce Brown had 15 of them.
Wow.
So don't tell me
all
the pushback that I got last year and said, because I had the mind that Bruce Brown was as important to the Nuggets title run as Nazem Kadri was the previous year. And it's not perfect. Maybe Kadri's just a tick up or whatever. But I think people minimize the departure of Bruce Brown. And now we're here, and that guy, if he was in the mix here, he would change everything.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and look, the bench gets shorter in the postseason, so it's not as big of a deal as in the regular season that you don't have the depth. And, you know, you're going to see Jokic and Murray hopefully playing 40 minutes. But we heard about it all last postseason, right, those non-Jokic minutes. And how do they prevent those from just being a disaster? They were able to do it a lot of times because Bruce Brown was on the floor. And look, the Kadri thing in terms of production and comparison, I don't know. But the other part of it that I think is very similar, and I just think back to that Suns series when he went into the Suns huddle and
yes.
he just wasn't backing down. He just kind of has that moxie.
Yep.
And, man, in the postseason, especially for a team that was trying to get over that that hump, that's just that's tough to replace. And, you know, you kind of don't know it's gone until it's gone.
Right.
And I don't know who's going to give him that swagger this year. I mean, Jokic is a great player. Murray's a great player. But, you know, one of the reasons Michael Porter Jr. drives us all crazy is because it's like this huge potential, and he can be great for a quarter and great for a half and, heck, even great for a game. But he just doesn't seem to have the swagger or the killer instinct. Bruce Brown certainly had that. And I don't know who's going to bring that this year. That's something they're going to have to replace.
Yeah, I think they're going to be fine as long as they're completely healthy. Completely. Bruce Brown, by the way, averaged double figures in every series last year in the playoffs. Mm. So, James, really good conversation. Had fun with you, and enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll do it again next week.
All right, sounds good. Appreciate it, fellas.
All right, there he goes. James Merrillette, editor at denversports.com. And we covered a lot of ground there.
We did. We did. We
covered a lot of ground there. Isn't how impactful, fellas, is that stat about Bruce Brown?
That's crazy.
That is was crazy. 17 double-digit performances off the bench last year in the playoffs, and Bruce Brown had 15 of them.
And then why do we act like he wasn't as important? And I know that, like, look, we all wanted him to be back. We just didn't have enough money to give that man.
Correct. And he ended up getting like $60 million, I think it was. It was like,
I think it was 80. I think it was 4 years, $80 million.
Stop.
If I remember right, yeah.
Good for him. Coming off the bench.
Yeah. It's just it's gonna be a different challenge this year. If the Nuggets are healthy, I think they're gonna be fine.
Yeah.
I really do. But if there's even one guy missing, it just changes my entire outlook at the forecast.
I'm excited for this, Zach. I'm interested because this year, a lot of these teams have loaded up. They have loaded up. Some of them have got a little bit more battle scars. So I'm interested to see how they handle this and how do the Denver Nuggets handle this, because it's going to be a little bit harder than last year.
It's going to be. Embrace it. Lean into it. It's not supposed to be
easy. Dance in the rain.
Look at you. Look at you.
Dance in the rain.
Don't wait for the storm to pass.
Now, we all know Zach doesn't dance in the rain. He has an umbrella.
Hey, catch me at the wedding. Catch me at
the
wedding.
He still has an umbrella on.
By the way, Bruce Brown's contract, 2 years, $45 million, not the 3 years, $150 million that Drew just said.
I said four for 80. Come on. Hey, you want to know what's funny about that? He has a team option this offseason that they could drop, and he could be a free agent again.
He could. Ooh. But when you're making that much money, he'll probably pick it up. Probably.
Exactly.
He broke the bank, man. Good for him. Okay. Take a timeout, and we're going to shift gears here because the smoke between the Broncos and one quarterback is now billowing, and this time it's coming from a local source. We'll tell you who said what next.
Woke up with my girl last night, so I went to the club. So I went to the club. Put on a fresh white suit and a mini coat, sitting on dubs.
Mr. Philip Lindsay, do you know who's singing this right now?
Show me some love.
Show me some love. T-Pain.
Oh, that's interesting. By coincidence, we're about to give something away. And it's Ludacris and T-Pain. Cheyenne Frontier Days? Who would have thought? That act intersecting with Cheyenne Frontier Days. That's amazing. Thursday, July 25th. And all this week, three times a day, you're going to get a chance to win a pair of tickets to the show. What do you have to do? Just listen to 104.3 The Fan. Stokely and Josh, The Morning Show, for your chance to win tickets. We have a pair right now to go see Luda at Cheyenne Frontier Days, July 25th. Caller number four, right now at 303-713-1043. Again, caller number four, 303-713-1043, and you're going to get yourself a pair of tickets to Cheyenne Frontier Days, July 25th. Cecil Lammy.
Woo!
You know they call Cheyenne Frontier Days the daddy of them all, right?
Yes, sir, yep.
It's kind of like the NFL draft.
Daddy of them all.
Daddy of them all.
Yep.
It's the best draft of all the pro sports.
Yes.
By a mile.
It gets larger ratings than most years of the NBA Finals, not every year. Gets better ratings than the World Series and gets better ratings than the Stanley Cup Final. It is the snip, snap, snap, to quote Dave Chappelle. And I am over the moon because it's April, the month of lies, and there's a couple of teams, mainly New England, I think, is lying right now about what they want to do at the top. And yeah. I'll say this, don't fall for the banana in the tailpipe, everybody.
We're going in the last break, I said that there is smoke now billowing between the Broncos and a quarterback. This time it's coming from a local source. We've heard every national guy out there connect Bo Nix and the Broncos. Mike Kliss, much like yourself, just does, I believe, one single mock draft. He's got the Broncos taking Bo Nix at 12 as of today. For a lot of people, Bo Nix is uninspiring.
Yes.
And I know you've heard that sentiment.
Yes.
Why should we be excited about Bo Nix?
Because scouts call him a supercomputer. And now you may think, well, I don't want a robot out there, right? And you may look at the Oregon offense and go, yeah, 150 micropasses last year. That's at or behind the line of scrimmage. 150, 145 of them were complete. But like, okay, well, what's the attack? And this is where the film study shows the attack nature. Not just a robot. He's running the system. He's doing some RPO. He's running the short, throwing the screens. But when he's under pressure, he's damn near 9 yards per attempt. It's 8.9 yards per attempt. By comparison, Caleb Williams is at 3.9. And Caleb was under a lot of pressure at USC. USC's yeah, offensive line was garbage. Oregon's was a little bit better. But when you blitz, when you pressure Bo Nix, he kills you. So he can dink and dunk, and oh my God, it's nothing but a bunch of screens. That's true. But the kid had a lot of freedom within that offense to do other things. And when you went after him, he didn't just wet the bed and keep going for the screen. When you went after him, he went long. And that's evident by his yards per attempt under pressure number.
So, Cecil, for Bo Nix, right, being at number 12, if we pick him number 12, for Sean, everybody has been saying J.J. McCarthy is Sean's guy. He's going for J.J. McCarthy if he can. But I, myself, think that Sean love somebody in the draft that isn't that high. And if it is Bo Nix, does Sean love Bo Nix? Is this the one that Sean wants, or does he want someone like J.J. McCarthy?
I think he wants J.J. McCarthy.
Okay.
Right now, if I were to guess, and again, this is after owners' meetings, this is after my question, which wasn't even about J.J. McCarthy because he didn't want to talk about specifics, and then I asked him about what do you get from a pro day, and he couldn't help himself a minute 23 into the answer to go like, we worked out J.J. McCarthy.
That's Sean.
The look on his face, dude, when he's like, we made him throw all over again. Yeah. He had this like just puckish grin, like he loved it, and I think he loves J.J. McCarthy. There's a lot to love when we talk about the fit and the combination. I'm going to give you a number system. I could be totally wrong, but this is what I think. Caleb Williams is a 10 out of 10, right? Elite level prospect. Although he's my number two, I like Jaden Daniels. Anyway, Matt Eberflus is a 1, okay? Bo Nix, maybe y'all aren't.
Wait, what did you just say?
Matt Eberflus, the coach, is a 1, okay? So we're talking combination.
Copy.
I do a little math. I'm from Denver, Colorado, but I can do a little math. So that right, combination is an 11, right? It's not great, Bob. I look at Bo Nix. Maybe people aren't impressed. Let's call him a 5 out of 10, right? Kay. 5. It seems fair. He might be a little higher. Sean Payton is a what out of 10? I'm going to put the number at 10, not because I'm a fanboy or whatever.
Oh, Cecil.
When it comes to developing and working with quarterbacks, every quarterback I've talked to, every single one, is super excited, not just because they have to say that, but the level of respect and gravitas that name Sean Payton holds, let's not put him at 10. Let's put him at 7.
Okay.
Is that fair?
I was going to say 8.
Now you're at 12. Now you're at 13.
I like
right?
this.
If
I
you
like
make
this
the
game.
Combination. All so right. When we talk about the fit, other than Kevin O'Connell, and I'm going to put some respect on Payton's name because he's got the hardware and Kevin doesn't. But if you look at the fits around, Matt Eberflus doesn't know what he's doing. Chicago's going to ruin Caleb Williams. They will ruin him. It's not him. It's the team. So who's the best fit for these young passers? I'll tell you where a lot of these young guys want to go. Right here. So they can work with Sean Payton.
That doesn't sound crazy to me. And I've seen some of that enthusiasm. It was Jane Daniels calling him a guru.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, Bo Nix talking with Robert Griffin III. I don't know if you saw any of that. You know, really
call
just.
Him a genius,
stuff
like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My issue with Bo Nix is, and by the way, I'll reference another Oregon quarterback. When I watched Justin Herbert there his final year, I just didn't see it. I didn't see it. It wasn't palpable to me. And I was wrong. You know, we're going to get stuff right and get stuff wrong. With Bo, I never saw it. It never kind of leapt out the screen for me. And I think maybe that's a part of my disconnect. Maybe I should be focusing more on the fit with Sean and, of course, the timing-based stuff. And that's how Drew played a lot, is snap it, get it out, give guys a chance to run after the catch.
Right.
But I never walked away from an Oregon, and certainly not an Auburn game, saying, damn, that guy is like a top 15 draft pick.
Right, yeah. Right. And I would say just go back to the pressure plays, because that's where it's fun to watch Bo Nix. And as watching, I only graded 10 quarterbacks, because anybody after, like, Devin Leary, it's like, it's not, no. You know, like, and I would almost put Spencer Rattler after Devin Leary. But anyway, that's a whole other rant. I don't like Spencer Rattler at all. Anyway, like,
there's some smoke with that one, too.
Nix does not excite you when you watch that Oregon offense.
For sure.
Because, again, it's a bunch of screens. When you get a pressure play, and he does have that attack mode, usually outside left, it's a little bit of a tell. But he does do a good job, even if he has to move a little bit, throwing to his left. But it's those type of plays, and maybe it's just a few, and you don't see as many because of that offense. But there are some that not only get me excited, and he's my fourth quarterback, so I can't say that I'm over the moon about him.
Yeah.
But he's above McCarthy. I do not have a first-round grade on McCarthy. But I know if Sean Payton loves him, then he's your guy. I know that 4 is up for grabs. I think 3 is up for grabs, but again, I think New England's lying about some stuff they're putting out there. But with Bo Nix, you kind of got to squint to see some of those plays. But in the NFL, as you well know, Phil, it ain't nothing but pressure.
No, that's it. So, Cecil, I asked Zach this earlier, and I want to ask you this, right? Take away the injuries from Michael Penix Jr., because that's my boy, right?
Yes.
That's the guy for me.
Okay.
All right. Where does he compare to all these other quarterbacks without any injuries?
I would say right now, with the injuries, he might be the best pure passer in this draft.
Okay.
Like, no doubt. He can sling it. It's super ugly when it comes, like, when it's, you know, the wind up and
rotation,
the left hand and the sign arm thing. But once it leaves his hand, he knows exactly where to put it. He can rocket it in. He can throw with touch. Like, he's an incredible passer. Two bum shoulders, two bum knees. And work ethic concerns that I did ask him about at the combine, he had a nice answer for me. Some of the teams, let's say, for example, I know the Giants, their strength coach was Indiana's strength coach.
Yeah.
And from what I'd heard, maybe he had some problems getting in the weight room at Indiana. Maybe that changed in Washington, 2 full seasons, fantastic, except for the Michigan game. But what's interesting is the Giants had a top 30 visit with Michael Penix. Mm. So I'm like, why is their conditioning coach, if they couldn't get him in the weight room, why is that guy taking another look, even though he's way further down the list? And Brian Daboll, you got to talk to your guy, man. Brian Daboll, he's got to learn how to have a poker face, right?
I heard you the other night.
Oh, my God. It was terrible.
Just terrible.
He's like so obvious. It's so obvious. Like, he doesn't like Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
He's not real thrilled about Drew Locke. They are looking for a quarterback. So if you're the Broncos, and if you fell in love with JJ, go get him.
Yeah.
Move to 4, maybe 3. Again, New England's line. But, like, you've got to make that move. And I even think if you sit at 12, you're risking Bo Nix not being there.
Mm. We're just a couple weeks away. We're just a few weeks away, and it is a tipping point for the Denver Broncos franchise.
Legacy. This is Sean Payton's legacy.
Yeah.
I mean, if he gets it right, if he picks the right guy, he's got a gold jacket. If he picks the right guy, he's
correct,
got another more hardware.
Yeah.
If he doesn't, he goes, remember Denver took the chance. They didn't know what they were doing. They wanted D'Amico. Imagine how the story will be told if Sean screws this up. And make no mistake, this is 1,000% on Sean Payton getting the right quarterback. George is just there to nod and wave. Boy. Smile and wave, boys.
Smile and wave.
I have a question about that I want to bounce off you coming up next.
It's time for the Drive's Top 5.
Not 2, not 3, not 4.
Presented by High Five Plumbing. Here's Zach and Phil.
All right, we are going to give our top 5 things we're watching for. As you just heard, the Drive's Top 5 of the night brought to you by High Five Plumbing. We'll do that in just a second, but I can't let you leave here. 2 questions. First one, if you could keep it to 30 seconds or less.
Sure thing.
Is George Payton here a month after the draft?
No. You like that? Is that short enough for you?
That's short and to the point.
That's
I like
the
it.
Old Drake. Now you speak my language. Now you speak my language. He should be gone. He should be gone.
Yeah, I think so too.
He should be gone. He should be gone. Okay. Michael Penix Jr. One more follow-up on Michael Penix Jr.
Sure.
When I watch Washington football, and I watched more than half of his games, I walked away outside of the natty impressed almost every single time.
Oh, yeah, 1,000%.
The dude was a baller, but the injury concerns scare me. ACL twice on the same leg. Shoulders, got it. But when I watch him, he looked great. And if he's at 12 and you're not moving up, and you know if the guy can stay healthy, he could play. Do you just bake in the injury risk as if you would another player not knowing if he could play? And it's, you just say, yeah, I don't know if it's going to work out because of the injury, but if he could stay healthy, the guy can play. Am I making sense here?
Yeah. Yeah, you are. But how do you feel about your weight program? That's my first question. Because when he was sitting, I guess I was kneeling next to him. When I was next to Michael Penix, closer than you are right now, Zach, I was like, that dude's lower body is skinnier than mine, and I'm skinny now, right? Let me finish. And Michael Penix plays in the NFL. I don't, all right? I might sprain a hammy mowing my yard in Roxboro. He's got to go against 300-pound defenders that want to kill him. You know, huge difference. So for me, it's like, can you work on that lower body? You've had trouble with injury-prone guys before. Greg Dulcich, it's a different player, it's a different position, but it's like, okay. And I'm not putting that on the staff whatsoever. Actually, I just think it's on Dulcich and his body and his frame's just carrying too much. So you have to judge by looking at Michael Penix and knowing, you know, the way that he looks, can he add 10 more pounds of muscle? I'm not sure about that, but it's something, you know, when people are like, oh, you're at a weigh-in, you saw quarterbacks without their shirt on. Yeah, I'm trying to see body composition, and you really don't want, like, a rocked-up quarterback.
Right.
But, like, is there 10 pounds of muscle on Penix's lower body that I can add? If I feel comfortable in that, then you know that skill is off the charts. The passing skill is there.
Yeah, and I know I'm going to sound weird right now because he does have skinny legs, but he's got, like, a bigger butt, it looks like. Like, he's got
that,
like,
bubble.
He's got a little bubble. He does, but it gets really skinny.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going
on
there.
Look at you guys. Now I can't walk by Zach. Zach's trying to look at me.
Exactly.
Look,
he's got that thing back there.
We got that clap.
He's been going to the gym. It's leg day. Philippines, he never skips leg day. I'll say this. The biggest problem that you have, if Michael Penix Jr. is your quarterback, is Mike McGlinchey's your blindside protector.
Yeah.
And I love Mike as a run blocker, not as a pass protector. And he'd probably even tell you that as well. I don't know if you want to move Gary Bowles over to the right side or whatever, but it just creates complications because you have a left-handed quarterback and you have an offensive line that's geared with a pretty good left tackle. I kind of hope they extend Garrett Bowles.
Yeah, I think
they will.
Give
him a little more money.
I think they will, yeah.
Keep him around a couple years longer. And then McGlinchey's fine as a mauler on the right. That's what he is. But if he's asked to pass protect an injury-prone guy,
yeah,
I'm really nervous.
Phil, what are you looking for tonight, man?
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. There's a couple games going on tonight.
Yes,
man,
there is.
That I'll be watching both of them. But the Colorado Avalanche versus the Minnesota Wild. See what old Onanen can do, because he's between the pipes tonight.
Yeah. Again, yeah.
You know, he didn't do well last time. He needs to have a bounce-back game, okay? He needs to stand on his head tonight. He truly does. For that confidence. I think that Georgiev, some people may think it's not. I think he's still in timeout. You know, I think Bednar didn't like what he's seen from him throwing the puck, wanting to take his jock strap off and throw it into the stands.
I didn't see that.
That's what he wanted to do next. Yeah. Like Juana, man.
He was emotional. He was upset.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, I just want to see what Onanen's gonna do tonight.
I like it. Drew Spivak behind the glass. What are you looking for tonight in the Drive's top five? Brought to you by High Five Plumbing.
I'm gonna stick with the Colorado Avalanche as well, but I'm gonna look big picture. And if you are one of those fans that is looking at the standings right now and you want the Avalanche to win the division and overtake the Dallas Stars and look at a wild card matchup in the first round of the playoffs, tonight is a must-win game. The Avalanche are 5 points back of Dallas right now. They play each other on Sunday, but if you want to stay in this race to win the division, which I'm not one of them, I'd rather play Winnipeg in the first round, but the Avalanche have a must-win game tonight, so they got to go out and take care of business against Minnesota.
I really like it. Good context there, adding on to Phil's observation. Kamaje Granderson behind the glass. What are you looking for tonight?
All right, I am going to go Warriors-Rockets. They are both fighting for the 10th seed. We are week and some days away from the play-in. Those two teams are right there at number 10. They are working extra hard down the stretch here to put themselves in position to get that 10th spot. And the reason that's significant is because the Nuggets, they're still fighting for the one seed as well. So all of this is kind of playing out the way the Nuggets, I think, wants it to play out, where it's like, okay, we get a chance to kind of also watch who's coming along with us. This is going to be an interesting race down the stretch, and I need to see between the Warriors and Rockets who's going to be a more realistic threat to the Denver Nuggets.
All right, good stuff there, KJ. We get to my guy Cecil Lammy. I'm gonna throw you a vine, friend.
Okay, yeah.
It's a little Jim Rome reference.
I know, I love it. I love it. And I'm just looking at my YouTube history. I gotta watch this video on the unboxing of that $2,500 Wilson Airless Gen 1 basketball. Have you seen it? The 3D printed basketball?
No.
No air, bounces like a basketball. This is where it's, and I buy a bunch of dumb stuff. $2,500 for a basketball?
Wait, $2,500?
$2,500 for an airless Gen 1 Wilson basketball.
What do you mean, airless? What is that?
It's 3D printed, so it's got a bunch of like, it's like, it looks like honeycombs, you know, like little tiny honeycombs. There's the little picture, but I got to watch that video. And also, Gary Vee did an 11-hour live stream on day trading, so I probably will watch that.
Okay. You going to watch all 11 hours of it?
I'll have it on when I'm writing.
Can you do me a favor on YouTube?
Sure. Send me the link.
Can you follow me on YouTube?
Yes. Yes, I can.
I have a video on my YouTube channel that has 283,000 views.
Oh.
You want to know what it is? You got to go on my YouTube channel to find it.
I knew it was coming.
This is not a drill.
Okay.
Hey, fantastic stuff, Phil. We'll do this again tomorrow.
Yes, yes.
From the rooftop at El Patio, Denver, across the street. The roof is on fire. Tomorrow, it's going to be a hoot. It's opening day here in Denver, and we are going to be there from 2 to 6. And come say hello. If you have tickets, come before or after. If you don't, come hang. Shout out Drew and Kamaje behind the glass. We step aside. It's Cecil freaking Lammy. Cease the D's. Once upon a time. All right. It's Denver Sports Tonight coming up next.